Okay, Rabosai. The Mishnah tells us at the beginning of Kol HaBasar that Kol HaBasar also levashel, etc., etc., we also lahalos im hagvina al hashulchan. And apparently the Mishnah is including what? If it says at the end, chutz mi dogim v'chagovim, it's including what in the Yisrael law? Correct. Not only basa behema, but also chayavi oath. Now the strange thing is that the Iser HaLaw al HaShulchan is a gzera. We're afraid that if they're both on the same Shulchan, then he might come to eat them together. And a gzera is very strange in this context when we're talking about oath. I mean, Bishlam, if you hold that oath is an Iser Doraisa and it's included on the Gedi, then Nichai understand very well that the Iser HaLaw could protect us. It's a siag, a gzera atu, achila, and violation of an Iser Doraisa. But if you hold that oath, in the worst case, is only an Iser Derabanan, which means that we're afraid that if we allow you to eat oaf with cholov, then eventually you'll eat basar with cholov. Now we're saying don't put the oaf and the cholov on the same shulchan because you might come to eat them together. So what happens in the worst case scenario if you eat them together? You violate the Iser Derabanan of oaf according to that mandium. In fact, Rabbi Akiva is the one who holds that basar oaf is only Derabanan. So you're telling me that the Iser HaLaw was instituted as a gzera because you might eat oaf? I mean, oaf itself is only Derabanan.
If you eat basar and with milk,
right,
still the rabbi.
Correct. So that's going to come up in this sugya today. So that's going to be Rav Sheshes, Maskev Rav Sheshes. But before we get to Rav Sheshes, I just want to clarify what was bothering Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef is the first man yomer here on the bottom of Kuf Dalet Omen Aleph that we want to study now, and Rav Yosef is apparently bothered by this very issue. How could it be that our Mishnah reflects the sheet of Rav Akiva, namely that basar oaf is only drabanan, and yet the Mishnah includes oaf in the Iser HaLaw? The HaLaw itself is a gzera, so it's a gzera because of oaf, which itself is a gzera because of basar behema. So you have like a whole domino theory, and that's called ein gozrin gzera l'gzera. So this is going to lead Rav Yosef to a more harsh or extreme position here in interpreting our Mishnah, that our Mishnah is not reflecting the authorship of Rabbi Akiva, but rather of Chachamim. Chachamim hold the basar oaf is da'oraisa. And once you assume that basar oaf is included on the Gedi, and the Iser Achila is therefore da'oraisa, we now justify the Iser HaLaw in the case of oaf as a gzera atu Achilas Oaf, which is Dorais. That's what it says over here. Omer Rav Yosef, Shmamina, from this statement of the Mishnah that the Iser HaLaw applies to Oaf, is we derive the conclusion that Basar Oaf Becholav Dorisa against Rabbi Akiva, like the Chachamim of Rabbi Akiva. Now, Rabosai, keep in mind that it doesn't say explicitly in our Mishnah that the Iser HaLaw applies to Oaf. But the principle that we apply in our mission is that whenever it says chutz, chutz is coming to tell you by implication what was included in the original statement. You know, these are the exceptions to the rule, but these are the only exceptions to the rule. In this case, the exceptions to the rule spelled out by the Mishnah are what? Chagavim and Dagim. But with the exception of Chagavim and Dagim, we're going to assume that everything else is included. And that's the premise that Rav Yosef is operating with. What I found fascinating about this sugya is that no one questions that premise. You know, in my mind, I thought maybe we could, you know, maybe we could wonder about that. Maybe the Iser HaLaw here is limited to basar behema, but if we hold like Rav Akiva, oaf is only drabbanan, it's not included in the HaLaw. But the Gemara doesn't even blink an eye about that. The proof is so powerful from chutz midagim v'chagavim that we learn, we derive that oaf is included in the original lisa. That is so powerful that the Gemara never even questions that. So again, the assumption here is in the sugya, and it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch La'alocha, that you can't put oaf and cholov on the same table. Again, to you and I, that doesn't sound like a chiddush, but when you go back to the original sources, that's a gewaldig chiddush, because we passing like Rabbi Akiva that oaf is the rabbanon.
Your question is very strong because you gave us two examples.
Right.
If it was your final example, then you say, okay, that and only that. But since you said two examples, the given for Rabbi, maybe there are actually more.
Right, and that's called what in the Lashon HaShas when you say there may be more. Tana Vashir is a pretty powerful, well popularized principle with regard to Mishnah. The Mishnah is not going to go kikruchla, kikruchla, and list every single case. It mentions Dagim and Chagov. But I think, Zev, that the proof here might be from the symmetry between the Reisha and what we call the Seif. It's actually the Bavem Tzoyis. Because in the Reisha, when it says Kol HaBosar Osu Levasha B'cholov, there it says Kol HaBosar. And that clearly indicates that even Oaf is included. And therefore, when you learn the Seif of the Reisha, Chutz Midagim V'Chagovim, you don't apply the rule of Tana Vashir. Because Kol HaBosar means everything but. If you say everything but, then you can't apply Tana Vashir. And the Gemara is convinced that in the next Bava in the Mishnah, the same rule of Chutz, which means exclusively these are the Chutz, but no Tana Vashir is applicable, is going to follow the Reisha. And if the Reisha says Kol HaBosar, then the Seif is also Kol HaBosar. In fact, it could be that what the Gemara is really implying here is that when you see the two words called Abasa, the Reisha, you should really attach them to all three parts of the Mishnah. Meaning, even though the Rav Yehuda Nasi didn't bother repeating himself, but you should really read it, Kol Abasa, Aser B'Levashel, Kol Abasa, Aser L'Halos, and Kol Abasa is Aser B'Neder if he takes an Eder Min Abasa. Be that as it may, Rav Yosef asks himself the following question. How could it be that there's an Iser Halah regarding Oaf if I would presume that Oaf is only the Rabbanan? That's not acceptable. Why not? He says, D'Isal Kedaitach the Rabbanan, if you want to argue with me and assume that Oaf is only the Rabbanan, Achila Guf Gzera. The Rabbanan made Gzera prohibiting Achila, because if you eat Oaf, then tomorrow you're going to eat Basar Behema. Vanan nigzar halah atu achila. Now we're going to remove you one more step and say you can't even put it on the table because that'll lead to achila, which itself it might lead to behema. So that's called gzera l'gzera, and that we don't accept. And you should know that ein gozrin gzera l'gzera is a klal that appears all over the place. You don't have to be a great, a Daf Yomi person. You don't have to know all of Daf Yomi and say it three times over in a day in order to know Ein Gozrin Gzera L'Gzera. Every Cheder Yingle knows Ein Gozrin Gzera. It's all over the place. And yet, look at the next line of the Gemara. Umina Tamra Delo Gazrin in Gzera L'Gzera. When I read this line of the Gemara, to use an Israeli phrase, I say Boker Tov. Like, how do you know that Ein Gozrin Gzera L'Gzera? The Gemara is putting up its dukes, fighting against Rav Yosef. Quote to me some source that Ein Gozrin Gzera L'Gzera. Ribono Shel Olam. Rav Yosef could have quoted the entire Shas, Ein Gozrin Gzera L'Gzera. And the Gemara is fighting with him. You know, Tamra. How do you know such a thing? So the one who's bothered by this is Tosus. If you take a look at Tosus, who we know at Tamra, he says the following: Bekama Mikomos, in many places in Shas, Omar he gufa gzera vanan neku v'nigzar gzera l'gzera. It's very important to read that with a question mark, because that's what you call a rhetorical question. Many times in Shas, the Gemara says he gufa gzera. The original is a gzera, and now you're going to make a gzera onto a gzera? So I'm going to tell you, don't walk in to a to a bakery, a non-Jewish bakery, because you might come to eat pas akum. Correct? Pas akum itself is a gzera. So now I'm going to tell you, don't walk into the bakery? In many countries today, if you want to get challahs for Shabbos, you have to walk into a goyish bakery. And the Rav of that particular town, you know, let's say you're in Spain, you know, in Barcelona, Spain, you know, the Rav is going to give a heksher on certain challahs, and you're going to break your teeth in Spanish or sometimes in French, depending on what country you're in order to ask them, where are the challahs? You know, and they have, every country has a different word that the goyim know for challahs, you know, so you get challahs for Shabbos. And the question is, you know, 99% of what's in the store is also Torah's Pasakum, let's say. Okay, we have to know whether we accepted the Gzeri Pasakum. I'm not getting into that. But we have a Seresi Meir Tshuva coming up. So, Pasakum, but you're going in there to look for that little corner of kosher challahs, you know. And you can say the same thing for almost anything that's not kosher. You know, how far are we going to go? We're going to make one Gzeri and then another Gzeri. So why does the Gemara feel compelled to push Rav Yosef against the wall, Uminah Temra, and look for a source for this? Oh. So Tosus answers. He says that even though you'll find, and he gives you a whole list of Gemaras, but there are many more in Shabbos and in a few places, and in Beitza, you'll find Ein Gozrin Gzeira L'Gzeira. However, there is a counter principle to Ein Gozrin Gzeira L'Gzeira. What's the counter, the flip side? Who remembers? What's the flip side? Whenever the Gemara asks, how did you make the second Gzeira when you already had the first Gzeira, and the second Gzeira is to protect you from marking for the first Gzeira, what is the classical answer of the Gemara? Correct. Kula chad Gzeira hi. Now, kula chad Gzeira hi, if we would apply it in this, let's plug it into this particular case, would mean the following. That when the Rabbanon, according to Rabbi Akiva, right? When the Rabbanon asid Oph, they asid Oph not just in what? In Achila, but also in Halah. That's called Kula Chad Gzeira. Oh, says Tosfos, that's what Minah Temra is all about. How do you know, Rav Yosef, that this case of Halas Oph is Gzeira L'Gzeira? Maybe Halas Oph is Kula Chad Gzeira. Tos doesn't spell this out, but I think this is the pshat. He says, "Hacha." Here in this case, why does the Gemara press Rav Yosef for proof to support the premise of his question? Be'inan lasuye raya. We need to prove it. Le'inyan gzera dahalah atu achila. I think what Tosus means to say is, prove to us that halah is in fact a gzera atu achila. Because if I want to be argumentative against Rav Yosef's premise, I could say that halah is not a gzera atu achila. It's not a second step. It's all included in the iser achila, meaning that the iser achila would be inclusive of halah as well. Now Rav Yosef's back is against the wall. He's got to search through all of Shas and find a source to prove that halah is a gzera atu achila. Because if he doesn't prove so, we're going to assume that halah is not a gzera atu achila, but rather it is part and parcel of the gzera achila. And the underlying premise, here, Tosfos doesn't spell it out, is that somehow halah on the shulchan is it's not like one step removed from achila. It is so closely related to achila that I don't even need a new gzera. But that whenever you see an Iser Achila, then ipso facto, there's going to have to be an Iser Halah. And the truth is that you may want to do a search throughout Shas and really figure out if when the Rabbanon prohibited something, did they go as far as to include Halah in it? And if you could prove that they did, then you have an argument of Kula Chad Gzeri. If on the other hand, whenever you find an Isra Achila, it's just that, and it doesn't go beyond to include Halah, then I come to the opposite conclusion. That Kula Chad Gzeri, Achila Halah, is not one you know, hyphenated entity, but rather halah is gzeira to achila. And since achila itself is gzeira, we're not going to add halah as gzeira to achila. So I don't know. You know, to really research this, you have to really come up with a bunch of, shall I say, isurei derabanan. I'll give you an example. You know, it'd be kedai to research chametz. You see, chametz is not a good case. I'll tell you why. Theoretically, chametz could be a good example because there's something called chametz derabanan. For example, there are two categories of chametz derabanan. There's chametz nuksha, according to a whole school of Rishonim, not all the Rishonim accept that. Chametz nuksha, very hard, stale chametz is only derabanan. And then there's chametz b'shos derabanan, meaning an hour or two before yontif, shashishis, maybe even shachamishis, before erev yontif. Because chametz only becomes awesome in the raisa midday, you know, because ach bayom rishon achilik. So the question would be, if let's say it's 10 a.m. on erev Pesach and I'm not allowed to eat chametz midrabanan, would I be allowed to keep it on my table? Or, for example, I have chametz nuksha the whole Pesach, and if it's only the Rabbanan going to that shita, can I keep it on my table? The trouble is that I don't think chametz is a good case in point, because chametz has to be gotten rid of completely. And that itself has to be understood why. But the Torah says, Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh, and the Chacham went very far with that, Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh. The Torah would allow me to, perhaps, keep chametz in certain places where I would not technically violate Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh. Or the Torah might say, you don't have to search and find chametz. You don't have to dig deep and underneath the ground. Maybe, you know, when the Shamash went down to the wine cellar and the servant came to bring wine for him, he left a piece of his pita on one of the wine. You know, that the Torah doesn't require. But the Rabbanu went very far. So Lamaisa, we live in Yirat Hashem in a chametz-free environment, correct? But let's take, for example, a different case. Let's take Truma Derabona. Right, so there's Truma D'Oraisa in Zeisim V'Novim, and then there's Trumas Peros Ha'ilon, Shar Peros Ha'ilon, which going to most Rishonim is Derabona, or Trumas Yerokos, which going to everyone is only Derabona. Now, once you're Mafresh Truma, who's allowed to eat the Truma? Only the Kohanim, right? So, any Kohanim here? No? So you and I are not allowed to, this I can say about everyone in the room, you and I are not allowed to eat Truma. Now, if we eat Truma D'Oraisa, that's a very severe violation. A Zar Shachal Truma is Misa B'dei Shamshon. But let's say, for example, it's Truma D'Rabbanan. So there's no punishment for Truma D'Rabbanan. I mean, you get Makas Mardus, but that's about it. Would a Zar be allowed to keep Truma D'Rabbanan on his table? And I'm going to assume that the answer is yes. So really, when Rav Yosef is looking to show and to demonstrate that halah al shulchan and achila are two different concepts, l'chora he should have had many different opportunities to prove so. And the question is going to be, why did he choose the case of chalas chutz laretz? Let's just give a little bit of introduction to the next line in the Gemara. Challah is a parsha in the Torah. It's in Parshas Shlach, and it has two parts to it. Part number one is the mitzvah of Hafrashas Challah, which includes not only Hafrash but also Nesina LeKohen, and part number two is the Iser Zaros. There may be a third part which is incumbent upon the Kohen, and they have a mitzvah Achilas Truma. But leaving that out, so you have these two dimensions of the parsha of Challah. I'm obligated to be mafresh challah, and I'm enjoined from eating the challah because I'm a zar and a non-kohen. In this context, challah is really identical with truma. Truma is one form of challah that applies to things that grow in the field. And then challah applies not just to things that grow in the field, but things that are reduced to a flour. And then you add water to the flour. And then you knead the water with the flour. So there's a gigantic machlokas, tanoim, between Rabbi Yossi Aglil and Rabbi Akiva as to when exactly the chiv challah emerges. Is it with what we call Gilgul Isa. That means as soon as you pour the water into the flour and you do the kneading, that itself creates an Isa dough, and that dough is Chayav and Challah. At this moment, if a Zar would eat from that dough, he'd be Chayav a very severe punishment. Or is it later when he bakes the dough in the oven? Okay, that's called a Maisa Afir. Now, Challah like Truma is a mitzvah tluya be'eretz Yisrael. And on a Doraisa level, it only applies in Eretz Yisrael, correct? Again, I'm sorry, you'll accept my apologies. I'm talking to you like fourth graders. But I need the chazor for myself, okay? So I'm talking to myself. Now, why is challah a mitzvah tluya ba'aretz? It's not so poshut. I'll tell you why. Challah is different than truma. Truma really depends upon the fact that I have something growing in the field. Right, that itself, you know, once I start harvesting, again, you need what's called not just ktsira, but you need a zore, right? Zore, which is winnowing. According to one sheet, even after the winnowing and the chaff is blown away, you need kri. That means you have to pack it together in a pile. And what do you say? Miruach. Oh, that's the word I was looking for. Sorry, miruach. And then I'm chayev in truma. But basically, miruach is really just a clincher. The chiyuv truma, emerges really inherent. It's inherent in the fruits when they grow from the ground. Challah is a little bit different because challah has what's called Gilgul Isa. Now, Gilgul Isa is a little bit more powerful than Meruach in the case of Truma, because the Iser Tevel is Chal even before Meruach. That's as far as Truma is concerned. But the Iser Tevel, with regard to Challah, is only Chal after Gilgul Isa. So basically, before Gilgul Isa, nothing happens. You know, there's no prohibition of eating the Chal, you know, what will become Challah. Challah emerges with Gilgul Isa. And that makes it a little bit more removed from the karka than truma. Gilgul is a maisa gavra, it's a maisa adam. And that's what engenders the chiyuv chal. So Tosfos says in Masechet Kiddushin that because of this close relationship between challah and gilgul, which removes it a little bit from the karka, it has an element, shall we say, a dimension of Eina Tluya Bekarka, that it's not a Chovas Karka. And if it's not a Chovas Karka, it should apply even in Chutz Laretz. So Tosfos claims that you don't find Truma in Chutz Laretz. There's no such thing as Truma in Chutz Laretz. There's something called Arzos Asmuchos, but that's not for us. We're going to take it as axiomatic. There's no Truma in Chutz Laretz. And yet, the Mishnah in the third parak of Chal establishes that there's Challah in Chutz Laretz. Why? Says the Rambam, Perek Hei Milchus Bikurim, Kedei Shel Tishtakach Toras Chal. So the Rafarshim rack their brains. Why is it that the Chachamim instituted Challah in Chutz Laretz, and they did not institute Truma in Chutz Laretz to the same extent you say Shalom Tishtakach Toras Chal, you could say Shalom Tishtakach Toras Truma? So Tosfos says that because there's an element here of Maisa Gavra to engender Chal, that's Gilgul Isa, therefore Challah becomes very similar to a mitzvah she'ena tluya b'karka. It's not a pure Chovas Karka. And if it's not a pure Chovas Karka, it's already, how shall I say, it's shayach to Chutz Laretz. You know, it would not be crazy for someone to say, you know, Rebbe, maybe challah should be chayiv and challah in Chutz Laretz. And the Rabbanan actually traversed that gap, and they instituted challah in Chutz Laretz. The Ramban has another pshat. The Ramban says that the reason why they instituted challah in Chutz Laretz, shelo tishtakach, because everybody has bread. Wherever you are on the face of the earth, you produce bread. But we need bread. But truma depends upon the ownership of fields. Not everyone owns a field. Other mafarshim say that bechlal in chutzatz we don't own anything. So therefore it's not shayach truma in chutzatz, because all the land in chutzatz back in the day belonged to the, you know, to the parts. Not to the parts, but to the municipal government. You know, you were able to, what do they call it here in Israel when you get that 100-year... you know what I'm talking about? Chachira, yeah, but there's a word for it. Yeah, it's basically, there are lands in Israel which you can never really own. There's no private ownership. Israel's a very socialist country. And in socialist countries, there's no such thing as private ownership. So this was very common back in the day, that in Chutzlaritz, the land was owned by the landlords and the you know, the government, you know, the Malchus owned the land, and so on and so on. So ownership of land, of Sados, is very rare in Chutzlaritz. But Chala, we're all on board. And therefore, Shemet Tishtokach Torah's Chala, they made this Gzera of what? Chalas Chutzlaritz. Yeah. What?
If you bring wheat and
Oh, that's a gigantic machlokas tanoi. What happens, and it's a two-directional machlokas, if I take tvuas Eretz Yisrael and I bring to Chutz Laretz, does it still maintain a status of chalado or raisa? And what's more fascinating, I think it would be very relevant if we could possibly plug it into this sugya, what if you take kemach from Chutz Laretz, or Tvuas Chutz Laretz, and you import it into Eretz Yisrael, can it now become Chalado Raisa? Oh, the Gilgal took place where? In Eretz Yisrael. So if the Gilgal is the Machayev, and again, this will further demonstrate Tosus's approach to why the Rabbanan instituted Chalas Chutz Laretz. If Chala is really engendered by Gilgal, then even though the Tvua grew in Arkansas, you know, it was brought to Eretz Yisrael, and the Gilgal was performed in Eretz Yisrael, or according to Rabbi Yosef Engel, the Afias Tanur was in Eretz Yisrael, then Yechayev in Chala Doraisa. But it didn't grow in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, Truma that grew from Tvuas Chutz Laretz is never Chayev in Truma Doraisa, no matter what. You could bring it to the Kotel, Hamaravi, it wouldn't become Chayev in Truma. So you see very clearly that Chala has a certain, you know, is a certain complex animal. You know, on the one hand, it's a pure, classical mitzvah tliya baretz, and therefore there's no chala doraisa in chutzot. But on the other hand, the element of gilgul really throws us a little bit off base here, and it's not a pure, classical chovas karka and a mitzvah tliya baretz. As we said before, there's a possibility, it's machlokas tanoim, but lahalach we paskin, like Rabbi Akiva, that if you take Tvuas Chutz Laretz and the Gilgal is done in Eretz Yisrael, Yechayim Chaladoraisa. Okay, so now here's the problem. When you're mafresh chala in Chutz Laretz, who can eat that chala? Well, like chala is Eretz Yisrael, only a Kohen can eat that chala. So here we have a case where there are two people sitting on the same table. The Kohen is eating Chala in Chutz Laretz. Again, we're in Chutz Laretz. And the Yisrael is eating Chulin. That's okay. But the only thing is that if we assume that Chalas Chutz Laretz is a Gzeira to Chalas Eretz Yisrael, we're enjoined from eating Chalas Chutz Laretz, because otherwise we might come to eat Chalas Eretz Yisrael because we're totally oblivious of the mitzvah of Chala. Then included in that gzera should be halah, and yet that's where Rav Yosef waves this flag. He says, "Tnan, we have a mission in halah, chalas chutz laretz." And here we have to turn to Daf Kuf Dalet on the base. Necheles im hazar al ashulchan. In other words, the Kohen brings his halah to the table, and the Yisrael brings his chulin to the table. They're both eating on the same table. The Kohen is eating chala, and the Yisrael is eating chulin. And we're not afraid to put these two on the same table that he's eating from. Again, if you're using the table as a storage, you know, not, what's the word I'm looking for? Not storage, but
a serving
table. You know, not a serving table. Wait, a serving table means what?
That you set up the food on this table, and then you bring it.
To a different table?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's not an issue. But if it's on the table that you're eating from, then once the Chachamim instituted an Isra Achil and Chalas Chutzos, they should have gone one step further and included Halal HaShulchan in that Isra. Oh, but they didn't do so. Says Rav Yosef, the reason why they didn't do so is because Halal is a Gzera unto itself. It's not included in the original Isra Gzera of Achil. Take a look at Rashi. Necheles Lekoinim Azar, the Logazrin and Dilma Shokil Zar Minev Yochil. We don't institute an additional Gzer, which would have been logical, and one could say it's warranted, that the Yisrael is going to stretch his arm out. And it's very beautiful because Lamaisa, can you tell the difference between, you know, I'm going to use the word challah to refer to the challahs that we eat on Leil Shabbos, right? Can you tell the difference between that challah and this challah? The challah that's designated for the Kohen, they look identical. It really makes sense that if you put all these challahs on the table, it might come to the point where you eat the wrong challah. And that's very, very dangerous, because if you're eating challahs chutzlarts and you're a czar, you violate the Isra of challah. Okay, in the worst case scenario, if the Yisrael ate the challah, what kind of Isra did he violate? Only Drabbanan. But nevertheless, you know, to come so close to violating an Isra Drabbanan without any archoka and eat from the same table that the Kohen is eating challah on, that's a Dovra Matmiya. And therefore, Rav Yosef says the only way of understanding this Mishnah and the heter of Halal in this case must be Ein Gozrin Gzeil Gzeira. Is vice versa, we see from this that the Isra Allah is an independent Gzeira. Rashi adds a few words. Rashi says, "Da achila gufa lo mitzera." I'm sorry, lo mitzera ba elamishum gzeras achilas chalas haaretz. Let's translate the Rashi, and if anybody has a comment to make on this Rashi, I would appreciate it. Rashi says that why is it that we don't want you to eat chalas chutz laretz? So Rashi says because we're afraid that if you eat chalas chutz laretz, you might come to eat chalas haaretz. Which, as we said before, for a zar to eat challah in Eretz Yisrael, which is like truma, is a chiv misa b'dei shemayim, is a very severe avera. It's worse than your classical law. Does anybody want to make a comment here on this Rashi? I don't know. I couldn't find anyone who makes this comment, but I'm very astonished by this Rashi. No, Rashi's talking about the Isra Achilas Chala in Chutzot, to a Zar. And Rashi's saying the reason why you're not allowed to eat Chala if you're a Zar in Chalas Chutzlaret is because you might come to eat Chalas Eretz Yisrael. Couldn't you give me a more basic reason why you can't eat this Chala? Forget about Chalas Eretz Yisrael. Why can't you eat Chalas Chutzlaret if you're a Zar? Because it's Chala. No?
No.
Again, it's not challah. So why is it that you're not allowed to eat a bitumah? And why is it that you... No, but I'm asking you, when the Rabbanan instituted challah... Wait a minute, let me ask you a different question. Shlom tishtaka. Are you going to make a bracha in chutzlarts on challah? On afrashas challah? In chutzlarts? Yeah, you make the same identical broth that you make in Eretz Yisrael. Again, you need 4.2 pounds of flour, whatever. Different sheet is 2.4, 2.2, you know. Chazanish, Reb Chaim, no, you name it. But whatever your favorite sheet is in poskim, we make a bracha on challah. We give it to the Kohen. The Kohen eats the challah. So if you would have asked me, why is it that a Zar is enjoined from eating challahs chutzlaretz, my answer would have been, because it's challah. And challah is for Kohanim, it's not for non-Kohanim. No, Rashi says, name. If you're going to eat the challah in chutzot and you're a czar, when you get to Eretz Yisrael, you're going to start eating challahs Eretz Yisrael. That's an interesting chiddush of Rashi over here. Nobody commented on it. I thought this Rashi was a big chiddush. Okay. Now the next part of this Mishnah is a little bit more complicated. And I'm not sure exactly why the Gemara felt compelled to quote this part of the Mishnah. I don't think, again, I may be playing a pedagogical game, so be aware, but I don't think that this has anything to do with our sugya. Because the Mishnah says, V'nitenes l'kol kohen sheyirtza. Now you have to know that with regard to Truma and Chala Doraisa and Eretz Yisrael, there are two categories of kohen. There's a Kohen who's considered a Chaver. That means he's a well-learned individual. And then there's a Kohen that's an Amoritz. And for Truma and Challah, you need credentials. You can't just divvy it up to any Kohen that you like. You know, you have your favorite Mr. Kohen, or Mr. Katz, or whatever his name might be, and you like to give him your Truma. But first, you have to check him out. He's got to be a Shtickel Talmud Chacham, because the Amoratzim were totally laid back about Tumah V'Tara. And this is throughout Shas. Is that for me? I don't know, somebody calling? I'm just kidding. So since nobody left, so I just want to know the following. If you ask me the following question, who qualifies as a Kohen to receive Chumah Challah? Not every Kohen. That's what Rashi points over here. He says that the Chiddush of Challah's Chutz Laretz is that you don't have to check out the credentials of the Kohen, just give it to any Kohen off the street. You know, I know of a Kohen who is married to a Grusha. That's not good news. That's not good news. In fact, in our synagogue, we didn't know whether or not we should block him from Duchen. Because technically, he's not allowed, he's a Chol. He's not allowed to, well, he's not exactly a Chol, but he's close to a Chol. And he's possible from Duchen. But you know, we live in America, you know. America today, you're lucky if you find a Kohen who's married to a Jewish woman. You know, there's so much intermarriage in America. It's amazing. So therefore, you know, but I'm just saying, you know, this concept of a Kohen Amoritz is not so rare. And back in the day, it wasn't rare either. I mean, the whole Takon of Dmai was because of the problem of Maser. We weren't sure when you buy grains from an Amoritz, you don't know if he gave Maser or not. It might be Tevel or Maser, which is an Isa Lav Do Raisa. So which Kohen is going to receive? He's going to be the happy recipient of your Truma, of your Challah. It's got to be a Kohen Muchzok. Kohen Muchzok means he has credentials that he is careful about the laws of Tuma Vitara. But when it comes to Chalas Chutz Laretz, give it to any Kohen off the street. Why? Because even though he's not Meshamra Vitara, we're not so careful about Chalas Chutz Laretz. The Chsiv, the Pasuk says, Laseis Menas LeKohenim, LaMachzikim B'Torah Hashem. In other words, if they're called a Kohen, you can describe them as a Kohen who's Machzik B'Torah Hashem, then you can give him what? You can give him his mana, meaning his truma. But if he's lo she'ein machzikim, if he's not machzikim, he doesn't have this chazakah of being careful about Tara, we don't give it to him. Good. That's the end of Rashi. Now Rashi adds another line. This is not part of the Rashi. This next line is Rashi going back to the first part of the Mishnah. And Rashi says, Alma bidrabanan lo gazrinan hala atu achila. Now Rashi discusses the issue of halah and the fact that you're allowed to eat from the same table in which the Kohen is eating chalas chutzlaretz indicates that we, in the gzera of achilas chalas chutzlaretz for a zar, we did not include the iser halah. Alma says Rashi, b'derabanan lo gazrinan halah atu achila. Very strange that Rashi split, you know, he wedged in between his first comment when he discusses Necheles Lekoinim Azar B'Shulchan Echad, and then all of a sudden, after wedging in there the whole discussion about what kind of Kohen and what credentials does he have to get Chalas Chutz Laretz, and then Rashi comes back to square one. It's a little bit choppy. You know, Rashi is famous for his clarity. Here, I don't know, I wouldn't give him an A+ for clarity. I mean, all of a sudden, he reminds himself that I forgot to tell you that halah is gzeirah to achilu. You know, like Boker Tov, like where were you till now?
Well, maybe there are other dimensions, such as with the coin to hold Tameh. And if he's in Chutz Laretz, Gezul, Tum'at, Eretz Amin. So he's Tameh anyway, he's the Rabbanan. And if he's eating the halah, so he's so far removed,
But why is that? See, Zev, I agree with everything you're saying, but I'm trying to get to some conclusion here about why it's important for us to know this. Meaning, l'chora ostensibly, if not for this discussion about the Kohen and his lack of credentials, I would have said that our discussion, our sugya, is focused exclusively on halah. What's the relationship between the Yisra halah, if it, in potential, and the Yisra achila in practice? Is it one? Is it two? Is it exer? Is it not? What do I have to know? Do I have to be a baki in Hilchas Chalas Chutz Laretz? Do I have to know that Chalas Chutz Laretz, in addition to being Mutar Ba'Allah, is Mutar for Kol Kohen, Lasseis Lo Menas, even though he's not Machzik in B'Torah Hashem? Why do I have to know that?
Is there a connection between the
But I think, forgetting about Eretz Yisrael, which is going to come up a little bit later in the sugya, but at this point in the sugya, it sounds to me like Rashi is wondering about this whole entity called Chalas Chutz Laretz. What is Chalas Chutz Laretz? You may recall that we discussed Oaf, according to Rabbi Akiva, which is only Darabban. What is the Iser of Bishol Oaf Becholov? Is it an Iser of basar b'cholov, meaning it's a kind of exera, but it has the same, or is it an iser unto itself? You know, it has its own personality, its own character, and its own identity. So I think you could ask the same similar question regarding chalas chutz laretz. Is chalas chutz laretz chala, or is it a new entity? And the reason I raise that question is because if you want to draw conclusions about gzeros and so on, well, if you're talking about Chalas Chutz Laretz as a gzera, then it should really take on all the details and all the dinim of Chalas Eretz Yisrael. Right? But if you're talking about Chalas Chutz Laretz as an entity unto itself, like there are two parshiyos here, there's a parsha of Chalas Eretz Yisrael, which is Doraisa, and there's a new framework, a new sugya called Chalas Chutz Laretz Midrabanan, and it has its own personality to it. And then I don't know, if it has its own personality, maybe the rules change as far as Gzera L'Gzera. Meaning, if Chalas Chutz Laretz is real Chala Midrabanan, with its own rules and regulations that completely deviate from the rules and regulations that govern Chala in Eretz Yisrael, maybe on the contrary, that could lead me to a Chumrah. Now, as I start with a Kula, and I say, wait a minute, why is Chalas Chutz Laretz Mutar to a Kohen who has no Chezkas Shmiras Tahara, right? Then all of a sudden I'm being very laid back about the dinim of Tuma Vitara, again, for Zev's reason, because of Avira Deretz Avir, whatever it might be. Again, but I'm not interested right now in going into those details, but just to show you that, wait a minute, the Torah says that you can't give out Truma and Chal to any coin off the street, and the Rabbanan are telling you, with regard to Chal Schutz, do it, who cares? I mean, it even goes very far. The real sugya of Chal Schutz is in Beitza on Daf Tes. And there the Gemara establishes in the name of Shmuel, and if I remember correctly, nobody argues with Shmuel, that Chalas Chutz Laretz ain't a Tovelis. There's no din of Tevel with regard to Chalas Chutz Laretz. Now, if you talk about Chalas Eretz Yisrael, for that matter, Truma, the Yesoda Yesodas of Truma is that when the Chi of Truma exists, then the flip side is that everything else before Yamafis Truma is called Tevel. And that doesn't apply in Chalas Chutz Laretz, which means that in Chalas Chutz Laretz, I can eat meat and eat as long as I'm mafrish chal at the end of the day. It's almost like a new kind of hafrashas chala with its own, as I said before, its own personality, its own rules and regulations. New, if that be the case, then maybe a zar is allowed to eat Chalas Chutz Laretz. And remember, I asked you the question a few minutes ago. Rashi racks his brains to figure out why you can't eat Chalas Chutz Laretz. And Rashi comes up with a fantastical answer. Because if in Brooklyn, New York, you are going to eat, or in Muncie, New York, okay, if you're going to eat Chalas Chutz Laretz and you're a Zar, then tomorrow on your next trip to Eretz Yisrael, keep in mind that back in the day, you know, transportation between Muncie and Yerushalayim was very complicated. Like my brother, when he came to Eretz Yisrael for the first time, he came with Zim ship lines. You know, it took him 3 days to get here. You know, I'm saying back in the day, it wasn't so simple. You know, people coming back and forth from Chutz Laretz to Eretz Yisrael. But you know what? If you got used to eating challah in Chutz Laretz, then when you get to Eretz Yisrael, you're going to continue eating challah. It sounds like the wildest idea in the world. And Rashi has to postulate this idea in order to justify why a Zar can't eat challah in Chutz Laretz. It's almost as if Rashi was pontificating as a halavina that challah Chutz Laretz is mutal azarim, which to my mind just undermines the whole concept of challah. But not only that, the Gemara establishes that challah Chutz Laretz ain't a tovelas, that there's no intemel. And now we're being makel as far as Tumah V'Tahara is concerned. That's pretty wild. So we're finding Rabosai that Chalas Chutz Laretz might be an entity unto itself. And Rashi insists that the Isra Achila is because of Achilas Chalas Eretz Yisrael, and we would have had a Havamina that instituting that Gzera of Isra Achilas Chalas Chutz Laretz to a Zar should now include within it halal ala shulchan. And if it doesn't, it means that halal ala shulchan is exer. And what I derive from this whole discussion is that there is a possibility that, and to me this is a gewaldige chiddush, that this entity called chalas chutz laretz, which the Rabbanan created, now the Rabbanan have to, in a sense, go through one takana after the other. Let me try to explain what I mean. You know, I'm very influenced by Rav Soloveitchik's approach to Yontif Sheni Shel Golis. So what I'm about to tell you really would require hours and hours of discussion. But I'll just give you the tip of the iceberg. Rav Soloveitchik was convinced that the takana of Yontif Sheni Shel Golis was made in such a way that the Chachamim had to actively prohibit, like a checklist. They had to prohibit this, press this button, then they had to prohibit this, and this, and this. Which malachas, for example, would be asar on Yontif Sheni Shel Golis? The Rabbanan had to decide, one by one by one, include it in the bag, or leave it out of the bag. And he was influenced to come to this conclusion by a sugi in Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara says that on Yontif Sheni Shel Golis, you're allowed to bury the dead. Now, I don't know if anyone here was ever attended a funeral on Yontif Sheni Shel Golis. It's one of those halachas that, like, dog for kabel schar, like ben soro mor lo'ayvel of nivra. I wasn't at the funeral, but I was told that there was a terrible tragedy in Harnof. A young boy was killed in an accident, and they buried him on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. That's what I was told. I never researched it, but in any event, it's on the books. It's a Gemara, explicit Gemara Masechta Rosh Hashanah, that Yontif Sheni Shel Golis le'inyan ames is kechol shavir rabban, and they made it like a day of chol. So the Rav asked the question, wait a minute, Yontif Sheni Shel Golis is identical to Yontif Rishon. How could they make it like Chol? And that's when he went through this chiddush that, you know, the Rabbanan had to be Mesaken every single Easter, and they went through every single Malacha and every single Drabbanan, whether it's Muktzah or whatever it might be, and they would decide whether it's in or it's out. Same thing here by Chalas Chutz Laretz. It sounds like the Rabbanan just didn't create an entity called Chalas Chutz Laretz. And the Mela, it's like Chalas Eretz Yisrael with the whole kit and caboodle. No, it didn't work like that. The Rabbanan would decide with regard to every single feature, every single din of Chala, which replies in Eretz Yisrael, which ones are they going to institute in Chutz Laretz? Yes, this one yes, this one not. So for example, the mitzvah of Hafrasha, yes. A bracha on Hafrasha, yes. A mitzvah Nesina Lekohen, yes. Then they ask themselves, what about an Isra Tevel? No. What about an Isra Achila? Maybe. Meaning, we don't know. Maybe we shouldn't even include the Isra Achila. And the answer is, they decided to include the Isra Achila. But not the way you and I would have said it, because Chalas Chutz Laretz is identical with Chalas Eretz Yisrael. That's not true. They had to decide to what extent Chalas Chutz Laretz should be a mirror image corresponding to Chalas Eretz Yisrael, to what extent it should not. And there was laissez-faire, there was absolute freedom in their decision. They decided to include the Isra Achila to a Zar. Why? because in the mind of the people, this is challah. And once you get the people used to eating challah in chutz laretz, meaning a zar eating challah, then when they get to Eretz Yisrael, they might not be so sensitive to realize, hey, challah is also lizarim. Even though to you and I that sounds like elementary, but they got used to eating challah in chutz laretz. Oh. Now Rashi says the following. If the Rabbanan had to make a separate takana with regard to Chalos Chutz Laretz, that it's Osur L'Zorim B'Achila, they created now a new Isur Achila, which they didn't have to do. And what motivated to do them to do such a thing, says Rashi, was a Gzera to Chalos Eretz Yisrael. Why didn't they go a step further and extend that Gzera to include Halah as well? And there's only one possible answer. Gzera L'Gzera. That Halah itself is not an automatic tag along to the Iser Gzeras Achila, but it requires a separate takana, a new Gzera. If we're going to allow Halah, you'll come to Achila. If we allow Achila in Chutz Laretz, you'll come to Achila in Eretz Yisrael. And that is too far removed. It's a double step removed, and therefore there's no what? There's no Iser Halah in Chalas Chutz Laretz. Amalei Abaye. Now this is the tough part of the sukkah. How does Abaye reject, how does he disprove Rav Yosef? So he says the following. Bishlema iashmin and chalas chutz laretz ba'aretz. Now here's an interesting case. He was mafrish chala in chutz laretz. And the Israeli authorities were very laid back about bringing food in. Like when you come into America today, it's like meshuga. They like they. And how many times have they asked me, "Are you carrying anything?" Like in a, and my wife says, "Yeah, they're telling me I have an apple." You know, something like we're sittering. You know, because if they find the apple afterwards, they'll lock me up in jail and they'll fine me for a couple of $1,000. You know, the Canadians I think are even more meshuga. And if you go to Mexico, by the way, don't bring kosher food to Mexico. I learned the hard way. I lost probably about $150 and a lot of Agmas Nefesh arguing with anyone who could understand English in the, amongst those Mexicans, and to try to convince them that I needed this food desperately to eat in Mexico. Okay, so I lost about $150 of stuff that I bought in Miami Beach because it didn't have a certain stamp on it. They'll only allow you with a certain stamp. I didn't have that stamp. You're a government inspector, whatever. So learn from my mistakes. In any event. But in Israel, they're pretty laid back. I mean, nobody discouraged me from bringing meat in Eretz Yisrael. Imagine that. Certain countries, they'll lock you up for that. So this guy decides that he's got chalas chutz laretz, and he's going to carry it in his satchel when he comes to Eretz Yisrael. Good. Maybe he thinks that that's a good idea. It's not really a good idea. It's not. I would not encourage anyone to do such a thing. But he thinks it's a great idea. You know, I'll have the Heilige Mitzvah of Achilas Challah in Eretz Yisrael. Good? So that's what he did. Says Abaye, now what's going on? He's got Challas Chutz Laretz on his table in Eretz Yisrael. And there's another Kohen who's got Challas Eretz Yisrael on the table. So now you've got two types of challah on the same table. The czar is eating chulin, but he may very easily think that, you know what? I'm going to eat chalas chutz laretz. And then he goes one step further and he says, well, wait a minute. If I'm going to eat chalas chutz laretz, I might as well eat chalas Eretz Yisrael. So if we have chalas chutz laretz in Eretz Yisrael, we put it on the table, says Abaye, then there's a possibility, and I'm interpreting this Gemara according to the Tiferes Yaakov, remember his last name?
Yeah.
Gesundheit, right? You can't forget that. Rav Yaakov Gesundheit. And he says that, you know what, now it makes sense to extend the Gzerah to include Allah, because there's a possibility of you're violating an Issa Doras. But says Abaye, if the Mishnah in Chal is addressing Chutz Laretz, there's no possibility that the guy's going to violate an Issa Doraisa. So again, they made one Gzera of Achila because maybe, you know, the mental state of a person will be, well, I got used to eating Chal and Chutz Laretz, maybe on my next trip to the Holy Land, I'm going to eat Chal as well. So there's a possibility in a long stretch that he might violate an Issa Doraisa. But to say that we won't allow you to put the Chalas Chutz Laretz on your table in Muncie, New York, because you might come to eat Chalas Eretz Yisrael. Halal HaShulchan. That that's already too far removed. Meaning, Abai basically, according to the Feres Yaakov, presents the following thesis. That Enochinam, when it comes to Xeris Achila, the Rabbanan are going to extend that Xerah, Kulichad Xerian, to incorporate Halah as well. But with one proviso, with one Bamedvar Mamur. And that is that there's a possibility of, a real possibility of you're violating an Issa Doraisa. So therefore, if you have Basar Oaf and Cholov on the same table, you may make that mistake and confuse Oaf with Behema. And there's a possibility that once you have everything on the table and you start eating Oaf B'Cholov, tomorrow you'll eat the Basar that they put on the same table. So you had Fleishik's chicken 5 days a week, and 2 days a week your wife makes you a steak. So a person might think, well, the rest of the week, you know, I've been enjoying, you know, the benefit of the oaf, and now you put cholov on the table. So he says to himself, you know, cholov on the table with oaf, on those 2 days of the week that we have basar on the table, I'll also put cholov on the table. He's got gvina and basar, real basar, the real McCoy, on his table. There's a possibility then of coming to violate an Issa Doraisa. So that's what Abai is saying. Let's read it inside. Omale Abai Bish Lema Iashmin and Chalas Chutz Loretz Ba'aretz. Okay, so somehow he transported his challah from Chutz Loretz to Aretz. So what's floating around there? He's got Ikal Migzim Yishum Chalas Eretz Yol Doraisa. And that's when the Tiferes Yaakov emphasizes this extra word Doraisa. He may come to violate an Issa Doraisa. And then we should be more harsh, we should be more strict, and incorporate the Issa Allah into the Issa Achila. And that's not considered Gzeirah L'Gzeirah. But... And if the Mishnah would have addressed that case and said it's mutter, v'logazrina, then you would be justified, Rav Yosef, ikol mishmeine, you could derive the conclusion that halah was never included in the gzera because it's a gzera l'gzera. Ela chutz laretz. But the Mishnah is only telling you that in chutz laretz you're allowed to put the chalas chutz laretz on the table, mishum delekel migzerhu, because there's no point to instituting a gzera of halah when there's no possibility of violating of a doraisa. Aval hocha, but let's switch back to our case of Oaf. Isharis leilas suki Oafu gvina. If you're going to allow him to not only, you know, if you're going to allow him to place the basar Oaf and the gvina on the same table, asilas suki basar gvina, he's going to confuse it and place gvina on the same table with basar mamish. Now we have Rabbi Sachtowitz's point. Wait a minute. And suppose in the worst scenario, he's going to eat basar behema with cholav. That too is not a violation of a doraisa. If you're telling me, Abai, that in a case of a chashash doraisa, halah and achila are one, and therefore we're going to have to prohibit you from putting oaf on the same table with gvina, because you might violate the issa doraisa of what? Of eating basa behema with gvina. So what if you ate basa behema with gvina? In the worst case scenario, there's no doraisa. Maskif le rav sheishes, so tsonein bit tsonein hu. Omer Abaye, gzera shemiyala b'ilfis roseach. Maybe he's going to take meat off the, off the blech, or off his burners, and he's got it. He's got it in an ilfis. An ilfis means he's got it in a pan. And if it's an ilfis... Okay, so now, the two cases of an ilfis. One is called a kli rishon, meaning he actually takes the pan from the fire and puts it on his table. Probably has a dreifus underneath it, right, a trivet. Or, alternatively, he takes the meat from the frying pan and pours it into another kli and puts that kli on the table. Now, it's burning hot. Okay, it's burning hot. I would not advise you to touch this meat. But there's a fundamental difference. In the first case, it's called a kli rishon. Right? It's called a kli rishon. Kli rishon means it was on the fire. In the second case, he transferred over to a second kli that's called a kli sheni. We have a principle that kli sheni ain't over vashel. So, for example, on Shabbos, you could never, ever violate bishul in a kli sheni. Ever, ever. Now, can you violate Bishul on Shabbos in a Kli Rishon? So that's a sugya called dagas finus. That's called kalia bishul, which means there's certain, like the Gemara talks about small fish, like those little sardines, that it's very easy, they quickly cook, and you can cook them in a kli rishon. And that's halach in Shabbos. And it could be that you chayev skila, you chayev doraisa, for kalia bishul in a kli rishon. However, that's only as far as Shabbos is concerned. It does not apply to bishul basar b'chalav. In Shabbos, there's a concept called melacha. The Torah never mentions bishul. But when the Torah says bishul, for example, with regard to basar b'chalav, bishul means al gabi ha'esh. There's a fire, and you put the meat and the milk into a pot that's sitting on the fire. You took the pot off the fire, it's called a kli rishon. It's not a violation of bishul basar b'chalav. So the Gemara says, okay, what are you afraid of? You're afraid that he took this pot, this frying pan, off the fire, and now he's going to pour this, the contents of this frying pan off the fire into a kli. So the Gemara says, sof, kli sheniu. The kli sheniu b'vashel, which in Hilchos Shabbos is an absolute rule that knows no exceptions. You can never be chayv for bishul of a kli sheni. So what are you afraid of here? Your premise is by we could only institute a gzera in Bas B'chol because he might violate a d'oraisa. Where's the d'oraisa over here? So the Gemara answers, gzera shemiyala b'ilfis rishon. What does that mean, rishon? Is it on the fire or is it not on the fire? If it's off the fire, then what difference does it make? That's not called bishul. We never cook something off the fire. And the precondition for bas b'cholav is derech bishul. But if the Gemara means shemiyala b'ilfas rishon, what he's going to do? He's going to put the cheese together with the meat on in the pot that's on the fire? Is that what the chashash is? This Gemara makes no sense. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Gzera shemiyala basa beimer agvina betoch ilfis roseach." But it's not a kli sheni. It's what? It's a kli rishon. Okay, it's roseach, but it's a kli rishon. Bishleim in Hilchos Shabbos, where the Torah says, "Meleches machshevis," you accomplish something, and if it's burning hot, you can achieve bishul. In certain cases, in a kli rishon, fine. Then I understand why it's considered bishul. As far as Shabbos, Meleches Shabbos is bishul. But the Hamili Bishul, as far as Basar B'chalav is concerned, Mehechatesi. Who says that a Kli Rishon that's not on the fire is considered Bishul as far as Basar B'chalav is concerned? So, Rabosa, what I want to do is ask you, if you have the time, the next Shia will be B'li Neder on Thursday at 12:15 and at 2 p.m. Okay, this is going to be my first experiment to see if I can keep you gentlemen on board. Again, the first year will be at 12:15. Raise your hand if you can make it at 12:15. Some people say they can only make it at 12:15. If you can't make it at 12:15, you can make it at 2. Then there'll be those who'll be here at 2, and the Mirza Shembly Neder will give a shear at 2. Okay, then?
Same shear twice.
I don't know. Yeah, you know, it's hard for me to give the same shear twice. I'm just not built for it. All right, then we'll go in for Mincha now, and I just go.
Before or...